The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello and welcome in to our Christmas week edition of the Leach Report. And good Monday to you. It is a week of UK sports conversation leading up to a big game against Carolina. And the last week before Christmas, a week from today, is Christmas Eve. We'll have best of shows on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So the last week of being live in the studio with you before Christmas. So let's kick back and enjoy the show as you're out working, shopping, whatever it might be. Coming up today, Ken Spencer from WHAS-TV in Louisville was at Rupp covering the game on Saturday. We'll get his take on Kentucky's win over Utah and looking ahead to the matchup with Carolina. Ben Roberts from the Herald Leader. We'll talk about Kentucky football and basketball as well as a little recruiting with Ben. And we have a post-game interview that our Chris LeBar did with Jimmy Dykes after the game, so we'll get some of his insight into Kentucky's performance. That's our guest lineup, always presented by Sleep Outfitters. Our show served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, and it's time for the Wildcat News of the Day, presented by Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. At Kentucky routes Utah 88-61, so a convincing bounce-back victory, about all you would hope for, coming off the setback the week before against Seton Hall. So Kentucky gets the win, gets to feel good about itself, and now goes into a tough stretch here because you've got Carolina in Chicago, then the next Saturday at Louisville, and the next Saturday you start conference play with a road game against Alabama. Alabama beat Arizona recently, too. So Carolina, by the way, looked great in beating Gonzaga on Saturday. It was in Chapel Hill, but the Tar Heels beat them by double digits, hit a ton of threes. Cameron Johnson, the former Pittsburgh transfer that was looking at Kentucky at one point, had his best game probably as a Tar Heel, and he's a real matchup issue. So we'll get more into that, those kinds of things as we get closer to this. But John Clay, his column in the Herald Leader, the headline on it, I know John doesn't write the headline, but the headline, I thought, was accurate, that the North Carolina game gives Kentucky a chance to change the narrative. You beat Carolina, especially with them coming off that kind of performance. They'll might be in the top 10 when the polls come out today. They were 12 going into that game. You get that win, and I think it changes the way Wildcat fans are looking at their team after Saturday, if you get it. Going to be very, very difficult to do. It's a chance for Kentucky to make a bit of a statement. I think they've been, honestly, in a bit of a recovery mode since that beat down by Duke back at the start of November when the season began. And I think it's taken them a while to get over that. And they're starting to play better defensively, shot it better, had a season high of 12 threes on Saturday. Needed that because Utah played almost exclusively zone, took care of the basketball, but again, with the zone, that made it easier to keep turnovers down. Still, only six turnovers. They didn't rebound it well, but shot a season-high field goal percentage, shot a season-high in terms of made threes, so that was very good to see. Tyler Hero, still not there yet in terms of the comfort with his stroke. I thought something we said on the broadcast that Cal said after the game, that three he made right at the end of the first half, he just caught it, shot it, didn't have to think about anything. And I think right now it's in his head a little bit. Most of his shots missed to the right, and he's too good a shooter to miss as badly as he did on some of those shots on Saturday. So that tells me it's in his head a little bit right now. But that one at the end of the half, you didn't have time to think about anything. You just catch it, shoot it, and it was pure. Jamal Baker looked really good coming in late, hitting a couple of big threes. We'll see if he can fill that role that Quade Green played, in that Quade had a knack, Mike and I were talking about this Saturday, for hitting a big shot at a key time. Not necessarily a game winner. He had one of those last year against Vandy. But just when there's a team struggling, Southern Illinois game was a good example earlier this year, to make a shot to ease the tension a little bit, somebody to hit a big outside shot. Maybe Baker can be that guy. Kentucky probably sees some zone until they steadily start knocking down perimeter shots. And once they do that, that should open things up a bit for the guys inside. And then maybe it starts to look a little smoother offensively overall when you get the inside-outside thing going. But good to see Baker come in and do what they want him to do, make shots. And he took his first two and made them. Football, big recruiting weekend, and from all reports, it went very well. They picked up a commitment already from a junior college defensive tackle, Elijah James, 6'4", 300, out of Iowa Western Community College. Signed with Central Michigan out of high school, now coming back to Kentucky. And Kentucky's, anytime you can get good defensive linemen, that's always exciting. And Kentucky is, I think, building what should be maybe its best front group by next season with the experience that they'll have. Quentin Bohanna in his third year, Marquand McCall in his second. They should be, I think, probably their strongest they've been in that front three group. The linebacker line will drop off probably a little bit, would seem likely, with losing a guy like Josh Allen plus Jordan Jones. But in the secondary, there's going to take a hit with the LA experience they'll lose there. But their front group could be the best, and now they've added a little more depth here with a JUCO player in Elijah James. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, and we're heading to a break. Ken Spencer from WHAS-TV in Louisville will join us when we come right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at TalkRadio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
16 after the top of the hour, Kent Spencer joins us from WHAS-TV in Louisville. He was in Rupp covering the Kentucky win over Utah on Saturday. So what were your impressions of what you saw versus what you'd seen up to that point?
No, I thought the ball movement was a whole lot better offensively for Kentucky, and I think that needed to change. I don't think they overpassed, because I think sometimes when you're trying to make a correction, the key word for Calipari in the last week or so has been willing passers. So sometimes you can overpass, but I didn't think they did that. I thought the ball moved well. I thought they got good open shots. I mean, and to be honest, we talked so much about shooting percentages, Tom, but you kind of saw, a couple guys. Tyler Hero is a really good example for me. He took a couple what I would deem ill-advised jump shots, threes, and they were way off the mark. When he was taking his threes and the rhythm of the offense, he was spot on. And I would say the same thing for Emmanuel Quickley. There was a time he took an in rhythm jump shot, and it was absolutely pure. A few minutes later, he takes a one dribble pull up in early in the shot clock. You can get that shot anytime if you're Emmanuel Quickley, and he was way off. I mean, I think that these guys are still very much, and a lot of them said it after the game, they're still very much learning on what you can do and what you can't do at this level. And, that was, I think, at least a sign that they're starting to figure something out.
And all of that would certainly seem natural for rookies. When you have a John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Bledsoe group, or you have Davis and Gilchrist, you disguise that learning curve a little bit just with their raw talent, and Davis blocks everything. But in those other years, I think it doesn't mean that they still can't be really good, get to a Final Four, make a championship run, whatever, like 14, like 2011. But it does mean they're probably going to take some lumps along the way more than you would like.
Yeah, and even for the special talent, like if you remember Calipari's first team with John Wall. Early in the season, everybody was just playing a man-to-man, and they were able to spread everybody out, and Wall was able to just go nuts. But if you remember in conference play, everybody started packing it in, and Wall really struggled there for a couple weeks. In fact, there was a game, and I forget the game, but Wall literally admitted, I'm not having fun right now.
I don't know what he wants me to do.
Yeah, so, I mean, even John Wall, as a freshman in college, had his struggles. And I think that that's just something that, that happens. I mean, at some point, you're going to hit a moment that you just can't figure out through straight-up athleticism and skill. And it seemed like for Kentucky, you know, it kind of started with that Duke game. And I think this, I think for a while, that Duke game, I don't think anybody gave it credit. That Duke game did a lot of harm for a while for this team. I mean, when you get smacked like that, sometimes it takes you a little bit of time to get off the bat.
No, I think you're absolutely right about that. In fact, we were talking a little bit about this on Saturday. The Jimmy Dan Connor walked by and said something to Mike and I, and triggered something that I had talked about back at the time of the Duke game, that Indiana team in December 74 crushed Kentucky. And it was a, you know, emasculating kind of defeat, like the one against Duke this year. And that team was all mostly seniors. And still, they came back in their next game, and they were getting waxed by Carolina. And Jimmy Dan went on a tear, and they won that game and kind of were able to pull out of it quicker than I think a team that's full of freshmen is going to be able to do. And so it was going to take a while to come back from that. You know, if you can beat a Carolina on Saturday, that could go a long way toward doing that, I would think.
Oh, 100%. And I think that this team, whether it's Carolina, whether it's Louisville the next week, I mean, this team needs, in my mind, I think this team needs at least a split there just to be able to have the right amount of confidence and to get a little bit of a swagger back before they head into conference play. I mean, I think that's just a natural progression because, let's be honest, they really haven't beat anybody of note as of yet. And I think you need to be able to do that before you head into conference play. And obviously, yes, a win against Carolina would certainly do that. I mean, look, this is a team that came into the season that probably thought they were invincible. And to be quite honest, I mean, you know, hearing everything that John Calipari said coming into the season, I think John Calipari thought maybe not invincible, but darn near close. Because he really, really liked this team. And I think he still does. But, I mean, I think he thought this team was really, really, really good coming out of the Bahamas and going in. Because when Cal likes a team, he's talking a little bit. He was talking a little bit, you know, in the offseason between the Bahamas and the first tip-off. And I think it threw everybody for a loop. Maybe not even just the players. I think it might have threw the coaching staff for a loop. I don't think they expected to see what they saw in that first game.
Yeah, I think you are spot on with that. We're talking with Kent Spencer. We'll continue on this when we come right back. It's about 22 after the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
That was Kent Spencer on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline. It's from WHAS-TV, talking about Kentucky basketball and the win over Utah, and now coming up against Carolina this Saturday in Chicago in the CBS Sports Classic. And back to the point you were making, Kent, you know, it's a little like you think back, you know, think to the days, the glory days of the heavyweight boxing division. And, you know, it's like a boxer that gets knocked out, and, you know, it's sometimes you take some easy fights to kind of get the confidence back, but at some point you never are fully back until you step back into the ring with somebody that's comparable and hold your own and hopefully win, but at minimum show that you can have a fair fight with them. And that's kind of where Kentucky is now. They've built their confidence back, mostly other than the setback against Seton Hall. Now they get it tested, take it out, that new confidence out for a road trip against Carolina.
No, 100%. And, you know, I think it's probably a good thing that it's done. I mean, it's up in Chicago, so it's not a true road game, but it is away from Rupp Arena. And I think you need to be able to prove that you can win away from home. And it's a perfect opportunity. You know, that this game is going to be very interesting in my mind, because I look at that Duke game and I thought Kentucky completely played into how Duke wanted to play. Duke was running up and down, getting up, you know, flying up and down the floor. And I thought Kentucky kind of settled, started taking, you know, panicked a little bit, started taking quick jump shots. Well, you know, North Carolina is going to absolutely fly up and down the floor. That's just what they do. But I don't necessarily think – I think Kentucky runs at times. I think they're a situational running team, an up-and-down team. But I think with that, with their inside play and their size advantage, I think that's something that they're going to have to kind of just be accustomed to and let the offense play out. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, because at some point you're going to handle adversity in this game. It's just the way it always is, and North Carolina is too good of a team. And when the adversity hits, do they panic like they did against Duke, or do they dig in? I think that's what I'll be watching for.
Talking with Kent Spencer from WHAS-TV. You were in the, I'm assuming, in the news conference afterward with Cal, where Rick Pitino came up in conjunction with the 25th anniversary reunion for the 93 team. And Cal said he had reached out to Rick, encouraged him to come back. At what point do you think that might actually happen, that he comes back, and what the reaction might be?
I think the next time that Rick Pitino will set foot in Rupp Arena, and I'm going to predict this, will be the reunion of the 96 team, the next reunion for the 96 team.
Three more years.
And I think that's when he will make his return to Rupp Arena. And I'll be honest with you, I think he'll be cheered. Probably maybe a few boos, but not many. But I think he'll be cheered. And I think it also makes a whole lot of sense for him to make his return to Rupp Arena with another team, especially a national championship team, especially that team. I think if he makes his return with that group of guys, I think it'll be good. And look, I mean, I think at some point, you know, obviously the wounds and the scars and all that stuff are far too soon. Right now, he probably needs to lay low with everything that happens and you know, the legal battles that he has with the University of Louisville and all of that such. But I think that, you know, with what Rick Pitino did for Kentucky and what Rick Pitino did for the University of Louisville, I do think at some point he needs to come back to both places.
I think you make a lot of sense with that prediction. That seems very logical. That would be the next reunion marker, three more years, that Final Four team in 93, and then the next big year was the 96 championship season, and three more years, you know, a lot changes with the passage of time.
Time heals all wounds, my friend.
Indeed it does. Quick thought on Kentucky and Penn State in the Citrus Bowl, an early thought on Kentucky's chances in that matchup.
Well, I think it depends on this. I think it all depends in the battle of the trenches on both sides of the ball. And I think that, you know, that's kind of been the recipe of success for Kentucky all season long. If they've been able to control the line of scrimmage, they can have success against anybody. They've been able to prove that. When they struggle up front is when they struggle. And Penn State's exactly one of those type of teams. You know, if you can, Penn State was one of those teams that came in. They still had a good year, but they didn't quite, you know, have the year that they expected. And I think it for them, it's the same recipe. If you're able to control the line of scrimmage, that means you're able to run the ball. Of course, Kentucky wants to run the ball. Of course, Kentucky wants to stop the ball. And then it allows you to be able to operate your play-action pass game. And let's see if Terry Wilson continues to make improvements. Obviously, you saw huge strides now that he's healthy against Louisville. Let's see if that continues on in a bowl game with, what is it, a month or so of
gotta run
before you kick it off.
Thanks, Kent. Merry Christmas. We'll be right back with Ben Roberts on the Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
26 away from the top of the hour, it's the Leach Report Radio Network. Our guests come to you on the Kentucky-branded hotline. Their huge holiday one-day sales coming up on Wednesday. There's a preview sale tomorrow. You can go to the stores or go to KentuckyBranded.com. Joined now by Ben Roberts from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com, and he does the Next Cats recruiting page, among other things. And we'll get to some recruiting, Ben, but first let's just start with the game that you saw on Saturday and your takeaways for Kentucky as they get set to jump back into the deepest end of the pool on Saturday up in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, for a 27-point win, I felt like there were still plenty of hiccups along the way. Obviously, it's still early, and it's still even though it's a little older team than we're used to, it's still a very, very very young team. Obviously, they shot it a lot better Saturday, especially Keldon. It's been a while since we've seen anything like that. But, I mean, they've got some stuff to fix. I think it'll be interesting to see if Nick or EJ can come along and really step up, in that post role, especially defensively. I think that's one of the biggest things they're missing right now. Obviously, Reed and PJ give them quite a bit, but they don't give them that lift, that athleticism on the block. And you see EJ's minutes kind of going in the wrong direction. And obviously, Nick has had his struggles recently. So I think over the next couple weeks going into SEC play, seeing one of those two guys step up, I think would be big for Kentucky.
Who's more likely of the two to get there, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I thought it would be EJ, but then his minutes the last three games have been, I think, his lowest minutes all season. Now we're 10 games into the season. Usually with a guy like him, you would see that playing time be going in the other direction. But I guess I still think it's got to be him. He's so skilled offensively, can do so much. I just think it's taken him a little longer to find his role. And obviously, when you have guys like Reed and PJ, I mean, you know what you're gonna get with Reed every game. PJ can be so dynamic when he's in there and can give you so much. It is hard to break through and become that third big, but those two guys are just so much different that I think one of them just has to do it.
It seems that there may be three things that I don't know if Cal sends a list to Santa that he wants, and one you hit on, they need one of those two guys, if not both, to give them minutes. Mike Pratt's been talking about it all year. Seth Greenberg, I know, tweeted about it yesterday. I saw, and you just made the point. And one of those two guys, if not both, gives them some rim protection that is desperately needed. Then the next thing I would think would be some consistency in the outside shooting, and you saw him knock down 12 on Saturday. Tyler Hero's got to find his shot. Quickly seems to be finding his groove a little bit. Keldon, I don't think he's not going to make six every game, but if they can avoid just the great disparities of three-point baskets. And then the third thing to me is for somebody to own the point guard job, and I would think the best-case scenario, the guy that would do that would be Ashton Hagans because of the defense he gives him. Seems to have a nice feel for running the team, but he can't be all they need him to be until he makes shots.
Yeah, and I think, that's still a lot to be asking for a team that had national championship aspirations coming into the season, and we're here almost to conference play, two games away from conference play. But, I completely agree with all that, and maybe that shooting performance on Saturday was one step in the right direction, and they shore that up moving forward. And, I saw quite a bit of Tyler Hero and Emmanuel Quickley in high school, and I am surprised that they haven't been shooting it a little better, especially in Tyler's case from three. And then with the point guard play, if you could combine Emmanuel Quickley and Ashton Hagans into one player, I think you'd have a heck of a point guard there. But they both just have their shortcomings right now. And Cal hit on it again Saturday, and this is something I've been hearing about Emmanuel, pretty much all season, is that he wants to be perfect. He's afraid not to be perfect, and he's not going to be perfect. And he has to just go out there and play his best and just kind of, not let it loose, but play basketball, and he's been so hesitant and so reserved because he's afraid to make mistakes all season long, and that's not going to work. And then on the other hand, you have Ashton, who at times, as you said, can be just such a great perimeter defender, off-ball defender, can do a lot of things there, has the speed, can make great passes, but sometimes he just speeds up too much and plays so fast and plays out of control some, and then obviously offensively, he hasn't been able to deliver much and doesn't seem to have a whole lot of confidence, especially from outside. So, I mean, two big, big areas of improvement, or both those guys have big areas of improvement to make. And, again, we're getting about to the halfway point of the regular season, and somebody there, like in Nick and EJ's case, has to step up and kind of take that job.
One thing I would think that is a little can be viewed as a little encouraging is if you need, you know, every team's going to need some things, the things we talked about that Kentucky needs. It's one thing, it's, I think, more troubling if you need them and you look at your roster and you think, man, we need that, and I don't know where we're going to get it. At least when Cal looks down the bench, he sees guys that can give him what he needs. It's just getting it out of him.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just one guy. And, you know, you don't have to put that pressure on one guy. We need this from you or we're not going to make a deep tournament run. I mean, like we've talked about, he's got multiple guys in all these areas where he needs something from. And, you know, if he can get EJ to be the rim protector, if he can get Tyler Hero to be a lights-out shooter, if he can get one of those two point guards to be a really good point guard and control this team, then you've really, really got something. And, you know, you've got multiple people at each of those spots that can step up, or even just step up on a game-to-game basis. If you can get one of those guys to do it every night, then you've really got something. So, yeah, and again, they're young. I mean, you got five freshmen out there, a couple of sophomores, an older guy who's new to the team. They're still growing. They're still, I think, getting better. And, you know, they're going to have some tough tests, though, coming up.
Yes, they are. We're talking with Ben Roberts from the Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com. We'll take a break, come right back. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Ben Roberts with us on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline from the Lexington Herald Leader and KentuckySports.com. And he also oversees the Next Cats recruiting page. There, let's talk a little recruiting, Ben. On the football side, big weekend for visitors. They end up with a junior college commitment. Coming off one of the best seasons in decades for Kentucky, what are you hearing in terms of buzz around the football program?
Yeah, I mean, they got big Elijah James, JUCO defensive tackle here over the weekend. He was one of close to a dozen official visitors, and it was obviously a pretty big weekend before signing day starts Wednesday. Had a bunch of them at the basketball game, actually, and honored a lot of football players and coaches throughout that game to, I think, show those recruits how much appreciation there was for that team. But, you know, they've already got 21 commitments going into Wednesday. They've got a few more on their radar, including two or three five-star guys, top 30 class for Rivals.com. So it's shaping up really well. For what should be, on paper at least, one of Stoops' best recruiting classes yet. And if they can pull in, you know, even just one of these four-star kids they're looking at down the stretch, I think that would be a big, big boost. And I know they're hoping to carry that over into a big 2020 class, because that's usually when you see – it's usually that next cycle when you have a big season that you see the big recruiting gains. But I think they're already starting to see it. I mean, obviously they got Jerry Casey, J.J. Weaver – down the stretch here, you know, getting some guys on campus that maybe they wouldn't have got on campus at the end a year ago. So, yeah, I mean, they're looking good going into it.
We talked about Cal's list of Santa in terms of recruiting. Who do you think would be at the top two or three slots for those remaining scholarships for Mark Stoops?
I mean, they had a Rivals 100 wide receiver, Devonta Lee, on campus over the weekend, who's actually teammates with Amani Gilmore, one of their quarterback commitments. I would guess he would be number one on their list, because that's obviously a position where they have needed some help in the past. Looks like they will need some help in the future, and he's a guy, you know, you never want to pin anything on a true freshman in football, but I think he's a guy who could be a difference maker pretty quick for whatever college he picks. LSU, going into this weekend, was seen as the favorite. You know, when you're talking about a guy ranked that high and home state LSU seemingly wants him, I think they've probably got to continue to be the favorite until he pulls a surprise and says, I'm picking Kentucky. But they certainly seem to be in there with him. Jamie Robinson is a DB in that class, another four-star kid who they've had on campus, and I think he would be near the top of that list. A couple others that I think they might have a pretty decent shot at.
Let's shift over to basketball, and how is it going with some of the primary targets for Kentucky? Matthew Hurt, I know, visited UNC over the weekend. Jaden McDaniels and then anybody to a lesser extent that you think they've got a good shot with?
Yeah, it seems to really just still be in a holding pattern with the guys who it looks like they have a realistic shot with. Isaiah Stewart and Anthony Edwards are still on the offer list, but especially in Stewart's case, I don't think anybody's really thinking Kentucky at this point. You know, Edwards could pull a surprise down the road. The three that look like the most likely would be Matthew Hurt, Keon Brooks, and Jaden McDaniels. And I would say probably in that order of most likely for Kentucky. Matthew visited UNC over the weekend, visited Kentucky a couple weeks ago. That was his first visit. So he's got three more visits. They've been saying they don't expect him to pop until April or so. So I think we'll be watching that one for the next few months. Keon Brooks, seems like it's going to be Indiana or Kentucky. There was a lot of North Carolina buzz, or at least some buzz that they might be in that top tier. That's died down a little. His one of his good friends and AAU teammates just committed to Indiana. Of course, that's his home state school. They're going to be tough to beat for him. And then Jaden McDaniels is down to five, has made his visits, didn't sign early, quiet kid. They've been really meticulous going about this whole recruiting process. He's had an older brother who's been through it before, so they know what they're doing there. I think Kentucky's got a shot, but when you're talking about the West Coast kids, he's from Seattle, it's a little tougher to make that sell, to have them fly all the way across the country to go to school. So, you know, those are the three that I think they have the best shot with right now. I would expect them to get at least one of those three, and I would say Matthew Hurt going into the new year would probably be the most likely.
Dante Allen over at Pendleton County, who's already signed, is putting up 50s with regularity. How far do you think he ends up moving up?
You know, I don't know, because I think his biggest jump came over the summer, because that's when he really burst on the scene and people really got to see him against top competition. He's not, you know, he's not playing against the best competition compared to some of these other guys who are ranked around where he is. So I don't know how much room there is for him to go up, just because I don't know how much some of these guys who make the rankings are going to be able to see him the rest of the year. If he were to make, you know, one of those postseason all-star games, something like that, and they have a lot of practice sessions with those where these guys are going up against each other, I think that would be a different story if he could prove himself in a setting like that. That might be beneficial. You know, they had the old Derby Classic. We don't know about that for this year. That's a place where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander kind of made his final splash as a recruit and moved up a little, because he was so great in the lead up to that game, and in the game itself, he was an MVP. But I don't know if Dante's going to have an opportunity like that against, you know, the really, you know, cream of the crop competition. So he's certainly not going to move down based on, you can't move him down based on what he's doing in high school this season. But, you know, I would be a little surprised if he moved up to that, like, five-star top 25 you know, ranking spot.
You know, back over to football, speaking of signing early, Kamon Butler, the defensive tackle that Kentucky has the commitment from, I see where he's signing early. I assume that's viewed as a positive for Kentucky hanging on to him?
Yeah, I think it's got to be viewed as a positive, and he was the one who, it almost seemed like a foregone conclusion even a month ago that he was going to end up somewhere else, and Ohio State was the one which was being talked about the most. The Ohio State buzz has almost completely died down. Michigan State's probably the other school that they're battling for him. I think the timing of his announcement, you know, he's visited Kentucky. They've really been pushing him on off-campus visits, and I know the coaches have been in there, I think, a couple times here recently, making him a major, major priority. So the timing of him announcing that he's signing yesterday, I think, was positive news for Kentucky. I think you're still going to hear some Michigan State buzz probably going into that signing. But, yeah, and he's really the only – that's the other thing is, you know, it gets a little wacky sometimes this last week ahead of signing day, and I think he's about the only one who would be even considered a flip option of those 21 guys that they've got that they expect to sign on Wednesday and could have – a couple more by that point. So, you know, if you can wrap your class or, you know, get 21 to 23 guys early, that really takes a lot of the pressure off of you going into February.
Ben, thank you much. Merry Christmas.
All right. You too, Tom.
Ben Roberts, Lexington Herald leader, KentuckySports.com. Quick break here, and we'll come back and hear from Jimmy Dykes on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Jimmy Dykes worked the game with Tom Hart on the SEC Network on Saturday. After the game, our Chris LeBar caught up to him for a quick chat about what he saw from the Cats.
I think John's going to like what he saw from his team. Although it was the last 90 seconds of the game, Jamal Bacon came in and knocked down a couple threes. And Cal continues to say, this is probably the best three-point shooting club that he's had. We just haven't seen it yet until today.
You get the sense that Keldon is becoming the alpha dog that you pay guys have had.
I think it rotates between Johnson and Reed Travis and now PJ. PJ didn't produce great numbers today, but he still had some alpha dog moments. Those three guys, you're starting to feel pretty confident what you're going to get out of them. I do anyways when I watch Kentucky play. Tyler Hero's got to make shots. I know he made a couple today, but he also missed three or four wide open. And Kentucky desperately needs him to be a 38-40% three-point shooter going forward.
How is this group different without Quad A?
It's too early to know. It's just one game, you know. And I know the deficiencies that Quad A had, as well as everybody. He wasn't great guarding the ball. But Kentucky's not great guarding the ball. It wasn't just him. But Quad A also was a 42% three-point shooter. He also had the highest assist rate of anyone on the team when he was on the floor. And he's a guard that's been through the SEC and played in the NCAA tournament. Kentucky doesn't have that now. They don't have one guard with any experience with that type of, you know, schedule in front of them. They're going to be fine. It could work out really well that the rotation is shortened down to 7 or 8. But you don't want an injury. You don't want foul trouble, because you could look down and think, maybe we could use Quad A for that 18 minutes he was giving us.
Lastly, you had mentioned the next couple of weeks, the significance of those games. How do you see them playing out?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. You know, North Carolina is kind of like Kentucky. They're still trying to figure out who they are as well with young guards. But they can really score. Like, they're going to fly up and down the court, you know. Kentucky's got to be ready for that. Then the game against Louisville, it doesn't matter, you know, in this state. And the game's at Louisville, and Louisville's much better than anybody thought they would be. Chris has done a great job over there, so... Two hard games in a row, and then you look up and they go into Tuscaloosa. So we're going to find out a lot about Kentucky here in the next 2.5-3 weeks.
Are they a notch below Tennessee at this point?
I think they are. I think they're a notch below Auburn and Tennessee. I think Auburn and Tennessee have separated themselves a little bit from the rest of the pack. But that could certainly change once we get into the league.
Jimmy Dykes after the game on Saturday. Donato, slice of Wildcat history this day in 1976. Kentucky beat Bowling Green in the UKIT 77-59. What was noteworthy, this may have been the only time this ever happened. They had three double-doubles. Jack Givens, 28-12. James Lee, 15-11. Rick Roby, 19-14. The reason, Kentucky missed 50 shots. Bowling Green missed 50 shots. It must have been a fun game to watch. Coming up tomorrow, Seth Greenberg, Larry Boughton, more on the Leach Report. Served up by Wild Eggs. We'll see you then.
Check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page.